Herzlich willkommen zum Winzer Talk. Mal wirklich Hand aufs Herz. Wenn du an spanischen Wein denkst, welche Regionen kommen dir da als erstes in den Sinn? Wahrscheinlich kommt dir sofort die Rioja in den Sinn oder auch Ribera del Duero oder das Priorat. Diese Regionen sind einfach weltweit bekannt. Und doch gibt es dazwischen noch viele oft übersehene Schätze, die erst jetzt langsam ans Licht kommen. Eine dieser Regionen ist das Toro. Das Toro liegt im Westen der Iberischen Halbinsel, gar nicht so weit weg von Portugal, wo auf kargen Hochplateaus unter sehr, sehr harschen klimatischen Bedingungen Weinbau betrieben wird. Und das mit sehr, sehr alten Rebstöcken, die teilweise sogar älter als 100 Jahre alt sind. Und aufgrund der Hitze und der heißen Temperaturen wurden in der Vergangenheit im Toro oft sehr, sehr wuchtige und alkoholstarke Rotweine hergestellt. Dieses Bild hat sich aber im Laufe der letzten Jahre stark verändert. Und verantwortlich dafür ist vor allem ein junger Winzer, der aus der Rioja stammt. Und dieser Winzer, der in jungen Jahren das Toro-Gebiet für sich entdeckte, ist heute unser Gast, nämlich Richie Arambari. Der heute 40-Jährige hat damals das Potenzial des Toro-Gebietes erkannt. Und was dieses Potenzial ist, mit welcher Herangehensweise und Philosophie er dort beschlossen hat, Weinbau zu betreiben, was auch die Herausforderungen und Schwierigkeiten waren und auch in welcher Krise die Weinbaubranche heutzutage steckt, über all das haben wir gesprochen. Richie hat kein Blatt vor den Mund genommen und so haben wir eben auch die Probleme angesprochen, wie zum Beispiel einem schrumpfenden Weinmarkt, dass die Konsumenten immer wählerischer werden und welche Auswirkungen auch der Klimawandel auf den spanischen Weinbau hat. Da Richie Spanier ist, haben wir die Episode auf Englisch aufgenommen. Er ist wirklich sehr gut zu verstehen. Es lohnt sich hier auf jeden Fall dran zu bleiben, auch wenn die Folge auf Englisch ist. Wir bekommen hier nämlich wirklich Informationen aus erster Hand. Und in diesem Sinne wünsche ich dir viel Spaß mit Richie Arambari von Mazu. Herzlich willkommen zum Winzer Talk. Ich bin Daniel Bayer und das ist der Podcast zur Website wein-verstehen.de. I'm really happy to have you here on my show.
Thank you very much. Very happy to be with you too.
First of all, I'm really curious about why did you move to this Toro region, where you actually come originally from Rioja. And I mean, many people know Rioja. For Germans, Rioja is like, wow, it's the best and everything. And Toro, probably not many people heard about it. So what was the initial thought that you decided to go to Toro?
Mm-hmm. That's a very good question. Well, first of all, you know, the main reason is that on the time that we started, we were really, really young. So as a family, and in particular, my brother and I, we are very curious and we love to travel. We love to try. We think that Spain, even Rioja, and of course we defend Rioja because we are from the region, but there is much more to discover in Spain than Rioja. So when we started to travel to other regions, to try different wines, to see different terroirs, to see different potentials, we arrived to Toro and we were absolutely in love. You've been with me there, so you know how it is. It's a completely different landscape, completely different social reality than Rioja. And we saw an enormous potential. So Toro is a very ancestral, very antique wine region, but not as well known internationally as Rioja is. And we saw a huge potential and a great challenge to start something in the region.
Okay, let's dive into it a little bit deeper. I mean, there is probably 250 kilometers in between. Is this right?
Yeah, something about 3 hours drive in the highway. So yeah, something like 250, 300 kilometers distance.
Okay, so it's very short distance, actually. You arrive usually in Madrid with airplane, and then there are two possibilities. Yeah? Either you go to Rioja, a little bit more in the north, or you go to Toro and you think, okay, it's only 3 hours, but the difference in the landscape, in the climate and everything is huge. Mm-hmm. So can you maybe explain us how is the climate in Rioja, particularly in the place where you are, because Rioja is not Rioja, it's different, and then compared to Toro?
Yeah, well, so it's true. I mean, Spain, even is not such a huge country. It's a very diverse country because in terms of mountains, rivers, so it's we are full of mountains, and that makes we are surrounded by ocean, two seas. So that makes Spain very diverse. Even you drive only for 300 kilometers, like in this case, and in particular in Rioja, in the region where we are, you have to understand that Rioja is right on the north. We are just below the Sierra Cantabria mountains, which are some mountains that are not that very high. They are around 1,200 meters, something like that. So we have a lot of influence from the Atlantic and the Cantabric Sea. So that makes our region to be kind of not very wet, but to have some proper rain, to have some very mild climate. So we have, in the summer we never get really, really hot, okay? Because we have the sea, which is a little bit softening the climate. And well, the how we call this climate is it's a microclimate mixed between the Mediterranean, the Atlantic, and the continental. So it's a continental soft climate. Okay, that will be La Rioja. So some proper rain, hot but not that much, and not that much cold during the winter. While if you drive down south, southwest to Toro, then you're getting into the Meseta Castellana. So you are getting into central Spain. Okay, Toro, it's a very tiny region which is very close to Portugal. So Toro is less than 100 kilometers far from Portugal, but is part of this big, what we call meseta, which is like a plateau, mountain plateau. Okay. For example, Madrid, to have an idea, it's over 600 meters high. So Toro, it's over 700 meters high, while, for example, in Rioja, most of Rioja is about 400 meters. So this region, there's an expression that says that in Toro, we have 9 months of winter and 3 months of hell. So it means very continental climate, very cold and long winter, and very short but hot summer. What is the positive thing of Toro is that during the day is very hot, but then as is at 700 meters high and inside this continental climate, we have very chilled climate nights. So then you have during the day the evolution of the vineyard, okay, and they get maturity, they have more sugar, therefore more alcohol in the wine, but these fresh nights makes the wines to have this acidity, which is part of the magic of what Toro wines have. So I don't know if I explain well what is the difference between the two.
Absolutely. Yeah, for me it sounds like it's quite the opposite. A lot of extremes in between, which makes it probably not easy. You said you were really young when you moved to Toro, and you probably learned how to make wines in Rioja. What's the Rioja style and how you treat the grapes and the seasons and everything. So, and now you got to a very new place, very new challenge, but a lot of potential. So.
Absolutely, absolutely. So you have to understand that, for us, I mean, being born in Rioja and making wine in Rioja, I mean, you are part of a big, like machinery, or let's say, many wineries doing great stuff, exporting the wines internationally. But in Toro, it was, and it is everything to do. So, I mean, still today, Toro is a very young wine region in terms of, like the international knowledge. So for us, it was a total new thing to start with, but of course, with the knowledge that we have from our family. And actually, some of the things that we did, and I'm going to talk a little bit about the history of Toro region. You have to understand that all over Europe, it was very typical that, like, for example, people in Madrid, in Barcelona, they normally bought wines from different regions, and sometimes they were mixing those wines to make a blend in Madrid, in Barcelona, whatever. Okay, these despachos de vinos, these little shops. So Toro, like for example, happens to Priorat the same. There were two regions that what the market was expecting for them. Okay, I'm talking always about the national market. They were expecting from them really high alcohol. Okay, like 16 degrees alcohol in the wines, and a lot of structure, power. So Toro wines, they were known in the national market in Spain for being like super heavy, you know, like, you know, super strong wines, okay? Our philosophy in Rioja is to make always fine wines. This is, you know, our leitmotif always, okay? So we thought, okay, why not to make something much more drinkable, much more understandable, approachable? So we started to change the way to do it in Toro. So first of all, we started to harvest earlier to try to get a little bit less sugar on the grapes. We started to vinify, not extracting that much, trying to make a much more refined vinification. Then we started to use less new oak, okay? So the barrels, not to have like new over-toast barrels, so trying to make a much more refined way of aging the wines. Therefore, when Matsu came to the market, it was a complete success. That was something totally new for the market to have a wine, which, by the way, Toro wines, you know, naturally they have this full body, this kind of sweet tannin. I don't mean sweet wine because it's a dry wine, but this sweet, very pleasant tannin. But at the same time, Matsu started to be very drinkable, enjoyable. And that was what really broke, you know, and create the new wave that Matsu is in Toro.
Mm-hmm. Let me pick up another thing, which is really interesting. I think as you explored Toro, you figured out, wow, the woodstocks there are pretty old. Like as I visited you, you told me there are like woodstocks, they are more than 100 years old, 140 years old. And they also survived like Phylloxera,
mm-hmm.
Die Reblaus in German. Can you tell me a little bit more about this? Like, is it easier or is it better to vinify wines from old woodstocks? What's the advantage like compared to woodstocks which are 30, 40 years old?
Mm-hmm. Well, at the end, you know, the old vineyards, what they have, you know that the vineyard, first of all, vineyard is the vine, it's a plant that survives in very difficult regions. So, for example, Toro it's a region that is a very dry, as I was mentioned, very, very hard climate. So the vines, over the years, they get their roots to go very, 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 very deep, okay, and to find water in the deep, deep, deep soil. So that means that, for example, when you have we have some vineyards that are over 100 years old, okay? So when you have vineyards that are old, even they have a very dry year, they get the water so deep that they have a very, so for example, we have some magical things that happen that in particular very dry years, the old vineyards, they produce more than the average, which is something incredible. So this pass of the time with these vineyards, what they produce is that they have a very little production, very little quantity, but thanks to this, you know, the roots and what it makes to have these older vines, what they make is a wonderful fruit. Always, as I was mentioned, not too much production, not too less production. So they are kind of stable during the years. And normally what they produce is the best wines. So you have the soul of the terroir is always, you know, the result of these old vineyards. In the other hand, the viticulture, okay, in terms of working these vineyards, they are normally easier to work with because normally these older vineyards, they get used to the climate, okay? They normally don't have problems with disease like mildew, oidium, at least less than the normal ones. And the bad thing, the negative thing, is that the quantity they produce is very small. They have a very, very small production per hectare. And this is the negative thing that the old vineyards have.
Okay. Let's go a step back again. So to keep the storyline. I mean, as a young boy, you got into Toro and you saw, wow, there's a lot of potential. Okay, it's different, different climate and so on. But I really know how to treat these vines and so on. And I have a vision. So first of all, what was your vision? And second, what was the biggest challenge for you? And be really, really honest, because nothing is always easy. You know, you go there and make your dreams come alive and so on. But what was really the challenge?
Well, I mean, always in the wine world, okay, always is a challenge to be a foreigner, okay? So of course we arrived to Toro. No one knew us, okay? So it's you know, in the Castilian region, so Toro is part of Castilla. You know, people are very loyal, very, you know, straight. But at the same time, they in the beginning they are like, okay, who you are, all right? So that was the greatest challenge, to try to get the confidence of farmers, people around, everything. That was the biggest challenge, okay? And in the beginning, they thought we were crazy. I mean, the expectation, to be totally honest, I will never in the time have dreamed to have the success that Matsu is today. So that is the reality. What we were expecting. So it was just an adventure for us. It was, okay, what can we find here? So we knew that we could create something completely different. So a totally, you know, outstanding and totally out of the box style of wine, okay, totally in comparison to where we were coming from. But the expectation was nothing else than, you know, that creating beauty and making something, you know, that really made us proud. The challenge was especially, you know, to discover how to work. But at the end, you know, in wine, what I always say is that you have to, you know, to flow a little bit. So the way that we make the wine, that we try to be less scientific and more spiritual, or more, you know, trying to see how things go and to not be too much mechanical. So it was a beautiful adventure in the beginning. And well, and you know, it was like everything in wine, time is fundamental. So this hasn't been something of 1 year. Okay. So it was the first year. People thought we were totally crazy how we were making the wine. Then, you know, time was going on. The people of the area, they were, oh, these guys are nice people. So they, you know, what they say, they do, okay? And you know, the success started to arrive. The reality is that Matsu, since the very beginning, it did really well. Consumers loved it, but the volume was super, super small. Little by little, we were increasing. They were started working with more farmers. So it's been like an evolution year by year. And right now, we've been 20 years in the region. So it's already, you know, two decades in the in Toro region.
Yeah, and I mean the name Matsu is Japanese, when I remember right.
And
And
it's something related to time.
exactly, yeah, it's really perfect because it means to wait, right?
Exactly. Well, you know, when we arrived to Toro, that was an idea of my brother. When we arrived to Toro, you know, we saw this totally different landscape of very few plants per hectare. You know, this plateau, much drier, and Rioja is much more greener. So this is like a little bit desertical somehow. And you know, when we arrived there, we said, okay, well, you know, it's a present for us that today we can use this centenary vineyard. So we said, okay, why not to talk about time with this? And in the time, my brother was reading a lot about Asian cultures. So he found that the Japanese way of respect of the nature, of you know, like for example, there is an art that was the inspiration of the labels, which is the wabi-sabi, okay, style of art and decoration, which is not treating, so just untouching the nature, so using the elements of the nature without treating them. So all that seduces, and we thought it was a wonderful idea to use it, and this is why we use the name Matsu for the wines.
Perfect. I think it also sounds really nice. Even though when I'm German, I can really catch the name. Like I remember it. It's not too difficult.
And you know, and it's something funny that I say now 20 years later, and is that probably today we will not use that brand. And I will explain myself. I think that 20 years ago, that was a moment of the history of Spain that we were very like you know, a lot of English names, French names, German words. So like, you know, like all the time using like very international. I think that for whatever reason in the wine industry right now, we have become much more local, okay? And we use much more local names, words, everything. And but in the time, it sounds fun. You know, I was 23, okay? It sounded really cool. And well, and now it's history. So, you know, it's funny to see how, you know, like how the way we dress, you know, the trends change, and it was part of the moment, and well, and it's been a success.
I think it was a great decision, especially today. I think it's even harder for traditional wineries to use these fancy names, like who on the hell can say Gewürztraminer or Scharzhofberger Auslese, stuff like this. Nobody can remember these names internationally. But if you have like a simple name like Matsu, which shouldn't say that it's simple or something like that, but it's just
no, but it's a short
name, easy to remember. And,
yep.
you know, not only in Spain, or you can even remember it if you are from, I don't know, Russia or somewhere else. It's just Matsu, and that's easy and perfect. And I think it's really, really important nowadays to make things more simple. Because for many people, wine today, it's not like in the past, you know? If you really want to reach people today, I think it has to be simple, but still in a really, really good high quality, with a winemaker who has a story, like and handcraft. Like it has
Absolutely.
To be manual work and good work and solid work, not the fast growing easy way, but a long-term way. And as you said, like 20 years, Matsu means wait. These are all really, really important aspects. And I appreciate that. And I mean, I tried the wines. I was there. I saw it with my own eyes. I was standing in the vineyard. And it's an experience. Because
you know, I think that nowadays in wine, and I think not in wine, in everything, I think that, you know, has to be real. Everything has to be real. I mean, you know, like this marketing of maybe, you know, I don't know, 20, 30, 10 years ago, that it was, you know, trying to look what is not, okay? I think that in wine today, what you have to be is real. You saw the work, Daniel, you've been there, the vineyards, how we make in a very artisanal way. But then when it arrives to Frankfurt, to London, to Paris, whatever, then it has to be at the same time simple. So it means, I mean, we are, you know, the world is very complex and it's full of brands and full of wines and full of, you know, of everything. So at the end, you have to be something impactful, that it's somehow what you see is what is behind, okay? But then if you want to get deep on this to see that there is a lot and it's a reality behind, I think this is a very, you know, simple way of explaining how the market works today, but experience, reality, handcraft are absolutely fundamental. But at the same time, as you were mentioning with Matsu, simple. So all this together, which is not easy to do, by the way, but this is what now works.
You know, when you try to do things simple, it's actually not simple.
Exactly. Exactly.
Richie, we talked about the region, we talked about the climate. So what's missing now is the grape, the varieties. Can you please name that? And what's the signature?
Yeah. So the grape varietal we use there is Tinta de Toro. Tinta de Toro is the indigenous grape from Toro region. So you know that Tempranillo.
Hey, kann ich bitte kurz für einen Augenblick deine Aufmerksamkeit haben? Ich möchte dich nur ganz kurz daran erinnern, diesen Podcast auf Spotify oder Apple Podcasts 5 Sterne zu geben. Deine Bewertung hat einen großen Einfluss darauf, wie viele Menschen diesen Podcast hören können und zeigt mir zudem, dass dir meine Arbeit gefällt. Herzlichen Dank für deinen Support und weiterhin viel Spaß mit der Folge. Weiter geht's.
Tinta de Toro, it's one of the different names that Tempranillo has all over Spain. Tempranillo, depending on the region, can be called Tempranillo, Tinta Fina, Tinta del País, Ul de Yebre, Cencibel, Tinta de Toro. I think in Portugal is Aragonés, and I'm sure I'm missing one of them. Okay, it's a very Spanish, very indigenous grape from us, but it's of one of these names. They have adapted Tempranillo from a different type of region. Okay, so what it means is that Tinta de Toro and Tempranillo, so Tinta de Toro from Toro and Tempranillo from Rioja, even they are from the same family, they are not the same. Okay, so Tinta de Toro in the region of Toro, as we were mentioning, it's a very dry, very difficult region, has been adapted. It's a very resistant grape, produce very small quantity of very little berries, okay, with a very thick skins. And normally what brings it's, you know, normally Tempranillo all over Spain has a medium body, but in case of Tinta de Toro, it's a full body, full structure. Grape with a lot of aromas. It's a, you know, kind of aromatic style of grape that, for example, give a lot of dark fruits. This is a very typical aroma flavor from Tempranillo and Tinta de Toro. And that at the same time, it's a wonderful grape for aging or potential of, you know, waiting years, giving more refinement for the time, because they maintain the wines, they maintain the structure, but at the same time, they get this refinement. And this is what how I will describe Tinta de Toro grape.
Yes. So, and I just remember the wine, I think the name was El Viejo.
Mm-hmm.
And you really get like this aroma of the concentrated grapes, like this black cherry, like mm-hmm. a little bit of this... graphite notes and mm-hmm. enormous length. It's really like a lot of pressure on the palate. It's mm-hmm. beautiful, like this concentration. This wine was really remarkable. I didn't forget it.
Yeah, well, and it's a very, I think I always say that, you know, with when you taste the range, El Pícaro, El Recio, El Viejo, not necessarily more is more. So it means that Viejo doesn't necessarily have to be like more of everything. At the end, I think Viejo is complexity, is, you know, you have flowers, fruits, chocolate, so, you know, a wide range of different aromas and flavors. And what is showing the, well, we're talking about vineyards that are, all the vineyards that we use for El Viejo are over 100 years. So think that those vineyards are from, some of them from the end of the 19th century. So imagine how many, you know, winters, summers, and, you know, like rains and all, everything that they've seen. So, you know, I think this is the, you know, it's what you will dream when you make wine. It's a dream that you will have of trying to make the pureness of what Tinta de Toro in a region like Toro, Zamora, will get as a result.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, perfect. So now we also talked about the grapes, the varieties. Do you have something more to mention there?
I think that we didn't talk about the soils. I think we didn't. I'm not sure. I talk about the climate, but soils, I'm not sure that we did. And well, if you want to talk about the labels.
Yeah, let's talk first about the soils. This mm-hmm. is interesting.
Okay.
Let's start there.
Yeah. Well, soils in Toro, it's absolutely fundamental. It's one of the key reasons of the style and of the Toro wines, and it's because Toro, and well, you saw it because you were there, is like if you are in the beach. So you have a big component of the soils is sandy soils. Okay, so you know that type of soil. One of the greatest things that happened is that during the phylloxera time, you know, that phylloxera arrived to Europe mid 19th century. It went all over Europe, but the only type of soils that vineyards survived were sandy soils. So this is why, for example, in Toro today, you can find still, not many, but some pre-phylloxera vineyards. So it means that 130 years old vineyards, 140 year old vineyards. And this type of soils, it drain a lot. So when it rains, the water goes down. Then below this part of sand, you will have clay, which is when the old vineyards that they got down very deep, they have the water supply, the water reserve. Okay, so they drain very much, and they are very poor soils, and this is why these vineyards, they produce very very little, but very very top quality.
Yes. So, and the phylloxera cannot move on this sandy soil, right?
The thing is that it's like a gum that goes down so they live in the soils, and for whatever reason, they cannot survive. They cannot, in this type of soils, they cannot live because the phylloxera attack from the roots. So they don't attack to the leaves, so they go through the roots. So this is why in these sandy soils, for whatever reason, the phylloxera cannot stand.
Yeah, so this is really, really good. And so you have vines and wood stalks that are really, really old. I mean, on the other hand, the yield is not so high. Is that a problem sometimes, or you say it's okay? And how do you look into the future? Do you plant new wood stalks also?
Mm-hmm. Well, the yield is, as I was mentioning, is very, very low on this. In general, in Toro, eh? O sea, for you to have an idea, regions like Rioja, they have an average production per hectare of maybe 7 tons per hectare, okay? While in Toro, I think the average, taking into account young vineyards and old vineyards, it's less than 5 tons. So it's significantly less. Well, the reality right now, Daniel, is that we are with expansion of Matsu, that we are not growing that much in volume, by the way, but we try to, as we open new markets, we try to have a little bit more availability of the wines, especially of Picaro, of the youngest. What we are doing is to start working with more farmers. So we work with about 180 different local farmers. And well, you might know right now in Europe, I'm not sure about how Germany is happening, but in Spain, we are, as worldwide, the consumption of wine is going down in general, in particular of reds. Well, some vineyards are being abandoned and are being pulled out. So every time that we sell one, so we produce one more bottle of wine, we are avoiding these old vineyards to disappear. So we don't have the need to plant new vineyards, but what we are trying is to work with more farmers, or our farmers, they are buying more land to be able to supply grapes to us.
So you don't plant new
We are not planting new. So we, Toro, what we have to get is to not lose hectares of the ones that they are. So it's not need to plant new.
How old can they get, actually?
Well, vineyards, I think the oldest we have is from the 1980s.
Wow. But when you look into the future, like 10, 20, 30 years?
Time will tell us. I think that, you know, the vineyards, because in Europe we have this cut with the phylloxera, but I'm sure that a vineyard that is well take care, and, you know, when you lose one plant, you try to replant. So of course, you know, one of these centenary vineyards doesn't mean that all the vineyards, all the plants are over 100. So maybe 70%, 60%, 80%. So if you treat it well, I think that you can last. Well, actually, we don't really know how long. So, you know, when I was in Chile, because by the way, we started a project of wine in Chile in 2015. We stopped some years later, but we were for a few years doing wine in Chile. And you were talking to the elders, and they said some of these, because in Chile, they are free of phylloxera. So the phylloxera never arrived to Chile. So in these old vineyards, they were saying, well, when I was a kid, my grandfather said that these vineyards, they were as old as they are now. So I mean, like really, really old. So how old can they be? 200 years? 250? I mean, they are not, they don't have records of when they planted. They only knew that they were very old when their grandfathers, they were very, very young. So
Yeah, I think it really depends on the type, on the genetics, on the environment, all these
And
little.
on the treatment of the, well, the one of that, that was a good thing that you said, because for example, what happens in Toro, Toro is a very, I mean, for example, Toro, you know, we don't need to use, I mean, it's, of course, we make organic, but not only because we want, it's because it's a region that you really don't need much from it. So, for example, before we were talking about the difference of in distance, Galicia, which is right next to Toro, it's, you know, like 150, 200 kilometers far. Galicia, as it is so close to the ocean, they have a lot of rain and they have a lot of problems with disease, a lot. But Toro, being a very dry and continental region, it's, you know, very natural. So I'm sure that regions like that, they have more possibility, the vineyards, to get older with much more health.
Richie, you mentioned you are organic and also because you don't need it so much there. I think this is because it's very dry, it's very hot. I mean, when you have a lot of pressure because of rain and when it's wet, you have to protect your plants. What's your approach to sustainability and what makes your winery like organic winery?
Well, as you were saying, I think one of the key things in Toro, in Matsu, is that the climate is very, very good for making a very natural style of wine. So the little quantity of rain, the very dry, very, you know, this hot and cold, but at the same time dry, that makes very easy to make a very sustainable and organic farming. That's very easy for that. There are other regions in Spain and in the world that are much more complicated, but in terms of Toro, it's very simple. So that then it reflects on how we make the wine in the winery too, because what we try is to make in a more in the most artisanal and less interventional way. So in the vineyard, we give very few treatments, always organic with copper, sulfur, that's it. Okay. The only thing you have to do is to try to work the soil to try to avoid competition of, you know, grass. Well, really, in total, with the number of liters we have, you don't have plenty of grass or anything like that. But you know, you have to work a little bit to try to make in a very sustainable way and to try to get the vineyards to at least produce something and not to be too much stressed, because of course the stress on the vineyard in terms of water is positive if it's a little bit of a stress. If it's too much, then it's bad for the vineyard. Okay. So once the cycle in the vineyard is done with this very you know, very untouched way of farming, then we try to reflect the same in the winery. So we don't use any added yeast. So always the fermentation is spontaneous with the indigenous yeast that it's in the winery, that it's in the vineyard, that comes in the grapes. We try to make a very soft way of, you know, very not too much extraction, trying to not make too many pumping overs, trying to make in a very natural way. One of the lucky things we have is that the facilities we use for vinifying, that you've been there, we have concrete tanks from the 70s, which are a wonderful way of doing very, very artisanal and very respectful way of vinification. So that helps to, you know, all this cycle of very sustainable, organic way of working the vineyard and working in the winery. That helps a lot to us. And then, you know, after that, what we try is to, in terms of the aging, because all the wines except El Pícaro, which is the only one which is no oak treatment at all, but the others, what we try is to make a very soft aging, okay, not very new oak, not too much toast. So we try the fruit to be standing as the main thing. So this is, you know, I think the, you know, the grand finale of the vinification, of trying to make the more artisanal and respectful way of vinification.
It really sounds like in the region you are, you have a lot of opportunities to work really sustainable. because nature and the wines you get from the vineyards, they are just really organic, natural on their own. And this is really, really nice. And I'm really happy that you discovered this potential of the region so early.
Well, Daniel, for example, I'm going to tell you an anecdote of 2025 vintage. Before I mentioned, we had a very, very wet spring and beginning of the summer. And we were organically in most of the regions, so in Rioja too. And for example, this year in Rioja, we are going to suffer a reduction of production of less than 50% of the total. Well, it happens. You know, it's we make a natural product, okay, and we work with something which is in the countryside, sun, climate. You know, it's something that we cannot control. So in Rioja, for example, being organic this year is being super difficult. But for example, in Toro, even we make organic, the reality is totally different. So Toro, as is not as wet as Rioja, we are going to have maybe a little bit less production. But in terms of, problems in the vineyards, we had, you know, nothing. Like nothing to compare with. And this is, you know, a good example of why a region like Toro is very simple to make it organic. You can do organic in Rioja, but it's always much more challenging.
Yeah, I think also in terms of climate change, it's actually an advantage, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, like, well, regions like Toro, depending what you want. I mean, if you want to produce 10 tons per hectare, don't go to Toro. Because you don't have the water, you don't have the, so you go to other regions. But if you, you know, you just, you know, accept the quantity, you accept the costs, which are going to be higher, and you are able to make a great product and to be able that the market understands that this is the fair price, it's fine. Okay. And, you know, regions like Toro and even regions like Rioja, you know, climate change, with the climate change, what we are doing is that we are planting the vineyards higher, okay, avoiding this, but you know, the, we can take decisions on that. This is the good thing of the both regions. But yeah, I mean, like I think even in years like the reality that we have recently, we can handle, at least.
All right, yeah, Richie. Like for the end of the podcast, I am really interested now, and I think the people also with the labels. There are like faces on the labels. How did you come up with this idea? And are those faces real?
Well, actually this, well, first I always say that when you start a new project in a region like Rioja, and when I mean Rioja, I can say Bordeaux, I can say Burgundy, I can say Mosel or Barolo. I mean, like really historical regions, you have like a, you know, like a style of label. Okay, so you can, of course, be creative, but when a consumer in Berlin, in London, in Paris, they go for a Rioja, they more or less know what to expect on the label, okay? When we arrived to Toro, that was, you know, how wines from Toro are. I mean, like, it's something very new, right? So we had a totally, you know, like open world to take a decision. So when we saw this very... you know, like desertical, difficult, you know, this farmer working in the winter time, really cold. So we say, okay, why not to, apart from the Matsu concept of, okay, the concept of time, why we have these vineyards. Before I mentioned this wabi-sabi culture, wabi-sabi style, which is using elements from the natures totally untouched, okay? So we say, okay, why not to make a homage, a tribute to the most important people in wine, which are the ones who are in the cold winter or in the hot summer. They are working hard in the vineyard every day. Happens what happens, you know, they're always there. And and actually today in Spain, we talk a lot about the figure of the viticultor, the vigneron, the vigneron. So, but in the past, 20 years ago, that was not that common to talk about that. So we decided, okay, why not? That was my brother's idea, by the way, to say, okay, why don't we use the face, okay, of the people and show in the face the values of the wines. So a young guy, El Pícaro, which is handsome and very fresh, no, very only 20 something years old, and well, with this face of Picaro, which is this this smart boy that knows how to get everything he wants, you know what I mean? And then El Recio, which is the strong, with the, you see on the face how the time goes, okay? And they say you can see the strength on the face, and then the old man, which is El Viejo, which you see a 80 plus 90 year old. So that was the idea of trying to reflect the values of the wine with the faces, right? And well, we chose real people. So they are not actors, okay? They are people from the area and from our regions. And well, we wanted to show reality, not actors. So that was, and I think this part of the success, it's everything is real.
I really like this idea, and it's very, very rare to come up with this idea. I think that is also like a part of the success of Matsu.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, and when you're going through Instagram or so, you see these mm-hmm. pictures, you see the faces, and you say, this is Matsu.
Yeah, and I think that, there is a label that at the same time is, because it was very brave, okay? So it's very creative and very modern, not like the classical label, but at the same time is very authentic. Remember that we were talking about what simple is. So even you have a lot of work behind, but at the end, the message is very simple, face. But what this face means, reality, craft work, the time. So there's many things to express in just one label, which is a face, no? And it's very impactful. Yes. So it's been definitely part of the success. And why the people remember so easily Matsu.
Yeah, and it's also really something I have to say, like you're really in a perfect timing, because with AI, artificial intelligence, mm-hmm. everything becomes artificial right now. Mm-hmm. And I think for people in the future, it's even more important to get a authentic, handcrafted wine with real people, with real faces. And I just can say, like Richie, even nowadays, like 20 years later, you're absolutely on track.
Mm-hmm. And it's you're right with the AI right now, AIA. It's it's going to be, I think that the reality is going to be the target, to see something real and not fake. And there were some, for example, now many artists are like afraid of what's going on, because right now a label, a design, whatever is very easy to do. But the real thing, what is real art and what is pure and what is really communicates, I think that will even stand up more, because to make everything is very simple, but when something is real behind that, people will appreciate even more with time.
Yes, Richie, for the end of the episode, I really want to ask you, like, the wine industry is probably in a little crisis.
Mm-hmm.
Like, because the consumption goes down and people are mm-hmm. sitting on their wines, and the climate change, and young people, they don't want to drink so much alcohol and so on. What do you think is the greatest challenge right now, and where does it lead us?
Mm. Well, I think that, crisis, it's a change. Okay. So we just have to accept the new reality. People are drinking less, and, somehow it's positive. So, I mean, I think that, it's never going to be a generation that is going to be drinking more than 1,000 years ago in the last thousands of years, or so in the last hundreds of years, our ancestors have been drinking, because at least in Spain, wine has always been a part of the food. Okay, so right now, the reality is totally different. And we have to accept it. So the industry has to become smaller. It's okay. The positive thing of it is that the consumer is going to be more demanding. So they are going to ask for reality. They're going to ask for a really good product that you communicated well, and they are going to be able to pay a little bit more than they used to pay. Okay, mm-hmm. that is the positive thing. I think from my point of view, the greatest challenge is that right now there is a confusion, okay, because it's a lot of talk, especially in Europe, about the alcohol, cancer, there is a lot of confusion about that. And, putting in the same level tobacco with alcohol. But, we have to understand that wine, it's history. It's a Mediterranean, it's part of the Mediterranean diet. It's part of our, the food that our grandfathers, they've been having, okay? So I think the greatest challenge to us is to communicate that, to say, okay, fair enough, of course, everybody, we all are going to be drinking less, and it's totally fine. It's good for health. The moderation is wonderful, okay? But, we have to, the greatest challenge is to be able to defend that wine is part of culture in Europe, that is part of our history, and that we cannot accept that wine can be considered like any other alcohol, bad for your health. This, I think, is the greatest challenge for the next few years, from my point of view.
Yeah, that makes totally sense. And I mean, I really like your idea about people become more selective, because they really think more about, okay, what should I really take? And to surrender, actually, because you cannot stop change. This is the only thing that always is constant, like the change.
Change is, I mean, at the end, crisis. I'm old enough to have lived two big crises: COVID and 2008. That it was worldwide, but in Spain it was really hard. And the only thing that we can is, like, when we have a year like this year, we have to just accept it and to adapt to it. So I think that in this case, this reality on the wine industry is, we have to accept it and to see the positive things on it.
How old are you nowadays?
I'm 40. I'm 40, 40? But I was in 2008. I was already working in the business.
Yeah, I'm also 39 already. Like, time's running fast, huh?
Well, yeah, I tell you,
Crazy. It's crazy. Okay, Richie, do you have any final words for the people?
First of all, to you, Daniel, that, very happy to spend this time with you, that we had a wonderful time together, and that you are always welcome to come back. And and to say to the people that, at the end, I think that right now, Spain, not only Toro, not only Matsu, Spain now, it's in a wonderful moment where many small projects in different corners of the country, while 20 years ago, Rioja was the number one, number two, number three, number four. Okay, right now there is a big revolution in Spain. I invite the people who are listening to us to have the ears and the nose and the palates open to new wines and new regions, because right now Spain is in a wonderful moment with a lot of very, very interesting stuff going on.
Do you have any recommendations?
Well, I think that right now, for example, regions like Madrid, Madrid is doing some wonderful stuff in Gredos. Galicia, it's in an incredible revolution. Regions like, for example, like Ribera Sacra, which is a totally adventurous viticulture, like really steep terroir and wonderful. And, I can be 5 minutes talking about the other examples all over, but, just to be open and to try and to see, because right now there has been a big, big revolution in Spain.
Wow. I love this. This might be the title of the episode. Big Revolution of Spanish Wine. I really love this. Richie, thank you so much. I really appreciate spending time with you, having a nice chat, and I wish you really a lot of luck and success for the future.
Thank you very much. Muchísimas gracias. Dankeschön.
Muchas gracias. Adios.